May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Olga Sabo with Offutt Kerman, and I represent the appellant Anthony Wiley in this appeal from Loudoun County Circuit Court. I'd ask to request 3 minutes rebuttal time to reserve. Your Honors, I am here today to ask this court reverse the trial court's equitable distribution and spousal support award for 4 major reasons. First, the trial court erred in granting wife's motion for alternate valuation date for Fidelity account 9289 and NFCU account 4412, as its factual finding that Mr. Wiley used the funds in these accounts for an improper and self-serving purpose was unsupported by the evidence admitted at trial. Second, the court erred in finding that Wright v. Wright did not apply to the instant case. Third, the trial court erred in using marital fault to economically punish Mr. Wiley and its equitable distribution award. And fourth, the trial court erred in its imputation of income to wife in the amount of $25,000, as this figure was completely unsupported by any evidence admitted at trial. Appellant acknowledges that the standard of review for the issues raised on appeal is an abuse of discretion standard, and that the trial court's findings will only be set aside if plainly wrong or without evidence to support them. And while this is a high standard, it is met in this case, and the trial court should be reversed. Turning to the first argument, the trial court's error in finding waste.
Wasn't there some evidence on that first issue that the expenditures of husband from the accounts at issue included joint counseling with his girlfriend, joint massage with a girlfriend, 20 to 30 trips with the girlfriend?
Your Honor, the one issue of the massage was a charge on American Express card that was credited back, as it never actually happened. It was about for $300. And there were other expenses. Many of them were business expenses. Both Mr. Wiley and his girlfriend, now wife, worked in the same company. And so, pursuant to the pendente lite order, he was required to use the American Express card for business expenses and then deposited reimbursements into the Fidelity account and then pay off the American Express card with the Fidelity account. So, I mean, money is fungible, money was going back and forth. And while there certainly were some business expenses and some other personal expenses, although those were not paid for with marital funds, those were paid for Mr. Wiley's separate Visa card, which he testified to at trial.
Well, the Visa card was paid for, was covered by marital funds, if I recall.
A separate Visa card, Your Honor, not the Barclays Visa card. That one was paid by some marital funds. There was a separate Visa card that paid for, notably, the expensive dinner in Israel that was not paid for with marital funds.
Well, once these events are in the record, doesn't the burden shift so that your client then has the burden of doing the accounting?
And I believe he did, Your Honor. The burden is on my client, although I will say that for the NFCU account, Mrs. Wiley had access to that account for a good chunk of the party separation, and she took money from that account. She wrote checks from that account. She took $12,000 as a withdrawal in February of 2015. So she had equal access to that account for at least a period of the party separation. So the funds were not totally in Mr. Wiley's sole control from the date of separation for at least both accounts.
Well,
the Fidelity account is different.
Who controls the accounts? Question of what purposes the funds are being used. If they're not being used for marital purpose, then we've got a waste situation, don't we? And the burden, as Chuck points out, the burden to show proper purpose shifts, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. My point in raising some of the funds that were taken by Mrs. Wiley is I don't know how those funds can be considered waste by Mr. Wiley. If she withdrew funds from the same account, the trial court summarily found that all funds were used for waste, and if she herself was taking money out of the account during this time period, I'm not sure how that can be found to be wasteful.
Wasn't the finding that not that all expenditures were waste, but rather that there had been some waste and the evidence had not gotten to the point of providing the full accounting for those accounts?
Your Honor, in granting the wife's motion for alternate valuation date for the two accounts in question, the trial court found that the funds in the accounts were used for both improper purpose and a self-serving purpose, period. That was the trial court's finding. There was no distinction about some funds or which funds. And over $200,000, the $260,000 that was spent during the party separation, was in fact spent on proper purposes pursuant to Virginia law. And all statements for both the Fidelity account and the NFCU account were admitted into evidence at trial, and they can be found in the record. And these statements clearly show, as was detailed in the appellant's brief, that the funds in these accounts were spent on the following. Attorney's fees for both Mr. and Mrs. Wiley, both receiving $25,000 from the Fidelity account. Court order pendente lite spousal support for Mrs. Wiley. Mortgage payments for the former marital residence where Mrs. Wiley lived throughout the party separation. Mrs. Wiley's elective plastic surgery, tuition payments for the party's child, personal property tax for both Mr. and Mrs. Wiley, new tires for Mrs. Wiley's car, new floors for the former marital residence where Mrs. Wiley lived, and the payment of marital debt. All of those expenditures have been ruled to be proper purposes pursuant to Virginia law, and those expenditures total over $200,000. So over $200,000 of the total amount spent during the party separation was for unquestionably proper purposes, pursuant to the case law in this court, namely Wright, Thomas, and Alpine.
So that means $50,000 or $60,000 unaccounted for.
It's $50,000 or $60,000 in question, Your Honor. I don't think all of it can be determined as waste. As I'm about to discuss, there is the issue of living expenses.
Does it all have to be determined as waste, or just there has to be evidence, just some evidence?
Well, Your Honor,
to support the conclusion.
Well, Your Honor, the trial court's finding that the funds in these accounts were spent for a self-serving, improper purpose, to me, indicates that all the funds were.
Well, you're saying that, you're not saying that if we see in the record that there was evidence to support it, albeit not all funds, that that would require reverse, I mean, that we couldn't affirm on that ground that there is some evidence in support of the court's exercise of discretion?
Well, Your Honor, I think the trial court's finding, the way that it's phrased, that the funds used is an incorrect factual finding. And what this decision or this granting of the alternate valuation date did was kind of shift the entire equitable distribution award, because that money, all of it, was somehow credited to Mrs. Wiley and found to be waste. And so I think, yes, it would determine a reversal to say summarily that all funds were used for waste, and that in fact was not the case here. And in fact, the majority of the funds were not used for waste. They were used for proper purposes pursuant to Virginia law. And in fact, Mrs. Wiley herself used a good chunk of these funds for a cash withdrawal of $12,000 in February of 2015. The issue of marital debt, in Alpine, this court recognized that the payment of marital debt is a proper use of marital funds during a separation. And appellee makes no argument other than incorrectly stating that no American Express statements for 2014 were admitted into evidence why the payment of pre-separation American Express bills with marital money should not be recognized as a proper use of marital funds. Those statements were admitted into evidence at Appendix 1060 to 1079. And the record reflects that the American Express card had a large balance as of the separation in December of 2014. At trial, Mr. Wiley testified that the American Express card had carried a balance through most of 2014 as the parties had been consistently living beyond their means. And he testified he took out a personal loan of $8,000 to make up the difference in the party's living expenses. And the admitted summary statements from the American Express card supports that testimony, and there was no testimony to the contrary. The record also reflects that the Barclays card had a large balance. That's the Barclays Visa card, but separate from the other card I was referring to earlier. Had a large balance in December of 2014 as well. This card had been used to buy several new and expensive TVs for the former marital residence in October 2014. TVs which remained in the former marital residence and with Mrs. Wiley as of the date of trial. And again, appellee cites to no contradictory evidence or testimony regarding the debt on these two credit cards in his brief. Additionally, both parties continue to use the American Express and Barclays card for at least part of the party separation, as is clear from the statements admitted at trial. And so if Mrs. Wiley continued to use these cards and marital money was used to pay for those cards, I don't know how that can be considered waste either, which the trial court also found in finding that all of these funds were used for a self-serving and improper purpose. There's also the issue of living expenses. And there was much focus by the trial court on the issue of Mr. Wiley's living expenses during the party separation. And yet, without even considering any of those expenses, we still have over $200,000 of marital money that was spent on proper purposes during the party separation. So even taking that aside, we still have a majority of the money spent on recognized proper purposes pursuant to Virginia law. Yet the payment of living expenses during a separation is a recognized proper use of marital funds and is not waste. And no case cited by either appellant or appellee, including Clements or Thomas, provides any definition of what precisely constitutes a living expense, and if it can include such things as furnishings for a post-separation living space. And to be able to effectively exercise...
Isn't the problem there that he was using it to live with his paramour?
Well, Your Honor, he obtained the apartment. She moved in later, but he had to have a place to exercise visitation with his son, and he rented a modest two-bedroom apartment. I think he would need two bedrooms with or without another female living there. He had visitation with his son, and he had to have a place to exercise visitation with his son. And he had to provide a place to live where he could, where his son could also be.
I think part of the consideration was that she, the paramour, didn't pay her anything. Period.
Well, Your Honor, while that was presented at trial, I'm not sure that really affects Mr. Wiley's...
You said none of it in and of itself is determinative.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Not any one factor is determinative.
Yes.
There were other considerations. You know, the argument wasn't just, as you just said, you know, with living expenses that are bona fide. The court had to weigh all the evidence, some that weighed in favor of the complainant here, and some that didn't.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it is worth noting that the parties had a fairly high standard of living during the marriage, which the trial court noted, and had a nice home to live in for their son. And Mr. Wiley had to find a place to live where his son could be too. And whether or not those expenses and someone else lived there, I'm not sure her contributions to expenses he had to incur anyway should be taken into account.
Was there evidence that the son visited overnight?
He did have overnight visitation, Your Honor. Turning to the second argument, in Wright, this court clearly held that there are two categories of post-separation expenditures of marital assets: expenditures for proper purposes and waste. This court has made no previous ruling that there exists a third category of deliberate expenditures for proper purposes, as counsel for appellee has seemed to indicate that he deliberately spent this money. Either the funds were spent on proper purposes or they weren't. Here, they were spent on recognized proper purposes, and the intent, I don't think this court has ever had an opinion that the intent for proper purposes is taken into account. This money was spent on the recognized proper purposes.
Clearly, the evidence had been clearly established. Husband intentionally spent his money on an apartment for the purpose of having his paramour live. That's a deliberate act, but I'm not saying it's required. But if there is evidence of intentionality, you're saying the trial court couldn't consider it?
Well, if there was evidence of...
required, but that it could be considered.
I guess in that limited circumstance, in that hypothetical you're presenting, perhaps it could be. There wasn't evidence of that here. And I guess what I'm simply arguing that there is no third category at this stage.
I'm not sure there was one by the trial court. I think it's more arguable that if there were evidence of intentionality, it considered it. And it weighed heavily. That's all. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a third category.
Just to make sure that you're aware of the
jury. Yes, I am here. I am in the rebuttal time right now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, then I will take a seat. Thank you. I thought I still had 2 minutes left for my 12 minutes. Okay.
You're in your yellow time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. If the court may please, I'm Lauren Steele. I represent Martha Wiley, the appellant. Let me start with the last issue first on the record on employment. She says the judge basically made up a figure of $25,000. Let me give you in the record exactly where that's not true. First of all, he kind of to minimize Mr. Bird's testimony by saying that there wasn't really any proof of specific jobs, they weren't really available.
She had $25,000 or approximate, you know, in the past.
On page 2159, the judge says, I looked at the Social Security history, recent earnings, to determine her future income. He said exactly that.
Didn't he also consider that she had $25,000 in earnings in the past?
Yes. And the Social Security, I was going to just tell you, recent earnings, $24,738 one year, $22,785 within the last few years. That's within a reasonable range looking at the other findings, flexibility of the child, the moves she made, 10 moves at least all over the world to support him, that's a factor. All of those are other factors. They want to just focus on one factor. But the court really didn't accept Mr. Bird. They want to make this as either have Mr. Bird or nothing. But there was evidence from which he could say, look, she could work some, but we've got a child that they both agreed has needs. That's a factor in the code. But he didn't make up 25. He looked at real-world earnings that she made. That's in the record. In fact, that's page 1424, exhibit 33. That's where it's in the record admitted that gives you the recent earnings. And we have plenty of case law that says you can look these recent earnings. Double Vine was the first one. That was my case. So there is plenty of factors, but a quantifiable amount to support the finding of the court in its discretion. Fault, I'm not going to really argue much on that because Wyatt Laughlin obviously say that you can look at that as a factor. It doesn't have to be quantifiable in money. Astor versus Gross historically was the first one. That was factor E5. They did look at a little bit of the monetary impact. Well, Laughlin and Watts are really E1 and 2. This way I've always lectured it when we distinguished that all these cases. This is negative things that the court can consider. And this is not just made up. This child had, you know, an adverse reaction to dad's affair. Mom had also, obviously, reactions to all of this. It had a complete financial impact on the family. So I think the fault in the cases we've cited, they say, well, there's no economic impact, and it's not to punish. He made this relationship. There's no punishment here. It's a factor. And if he did look at it, then my client's being punished in a way. But anyway. Now, let's talk about fidelity. They're missing the big picture. I think Judge Annunziata has it right on. The court looked at all of the factors, including factor 10. It looked at all of the factors in detail, findings of the contributions, the negative things that the husband did, her contributions to the moves, all of the things that the court looks at in every other factor. And so in fashioning this award, we look at the finding of the alternate evaluation date. The statute says that's to attain the ends of justice. I don't know of a single case that says you have to have 100% to reevaluate an account retroactively when there's clearly a finding of some dissipation. Now, the court never made a finding that it was $200,000. And I disagree that that's the finding. I don't disagree that some payments were made out of the account, and the judge made numerous findings on that, that the mortgage was paid. But the fact is, it's a mixed account, and you either revalue it back or not. So yes, we have a $200,000 retroactive finding, but the husband really never quantified it or met his burden of proof. They're relying on a couple things. A bunch of pages where he says, personal, business. What does that show? Personal expenses? Well, first of all, you got to remember, in hindsight, they're saying, well, the first payment in January to Amex was for pre-separation expenses. Well, he went to Mexico right after their nice vacation in Thanksgiving, then comes back from Mexico where his wife is, or his now wife is, and comes back and says, oh, I'm not happy. He did a lot of business trips with her, and charged it to the business, and he admitted it on a couple, one to Mississippi and one to Dominican Republic, where he had really just charged it on business, but it was partly pleasure. But that's just what he did. And the court can take inference that on all these other trips, when he says it's business, it's really pleasure also. I doubt if they had separate rooms in their thing. I think the court can make that inference, especially in light of the October evidence of emails where he's saying to his paramour, you've got a nice fan, I'll use it that way, and babe. Something was going on in October, so the evidence doesn't put a fine line on the separation date. It's in anticipation of leaving, and he was anticipating leaving in October, November, most likely, and the court made that inference. We also have Street versus Street, where the court can analyze and accept or reject evidence. And he had a lot of questions about some of the issues of credibility, but the fact is, when he would say personal what? We don't know. After the separation, I would argue that expenses for furniture, which were extensive, are all in there, 702, 703, 509. Who went and picked it out? She did. His paramour. They went together. It was a mutual thing where they went out and picked it out. It wasn't just him. I think that would be...
But he still needed furniture.
But at the expense of our client, where he's not being able... He's paying that at the expense of the marital account, paying back the charge cards? No, I don't think that would be true. But that's the problem. In other words, he's using it to not furtherance of the marriage. He's using it to furtherance of an affair to break up the marriage. And so acquisition of property de facto, my client is paying his equitable distribution post-separation separate property. And that's not in furtherance. The statute doesn't say only dissipation. It says expenses not in furtherance of the marriage. How can his post-separation furniture be in furtherance of their marriage when he's going out and picking it out with his paramour and expending all these funds?
And so that his son has a comfortable place to come for visitation.
Well, I got that. First, and of course, then you have the first night and the paramour before there was an order is overnight with him. And that was another issue. But not to put salt on it.
Just a legal question. What is the controlling case on the burden of proof? Who has the burden
Clements
of proof?
Versus Clements.
Who has the burden of proof on the issue of waste?
The one who is charged with the funds who has that basic control, which would be Mr. Wiley.
So is the conclusion then that the husband failed in proving
absolutely
which funds were clearly distinguishable as proper?
Yes, he did, and here's why. First, the personal versus business, that didn't show the court anything because we don't know what the personal purpose was. That was just a generic, and the court could have said, well, some of this business still could have related to the relationship. Street versus street, you could accept or reject any or all of testimony. Secondly, we have this chart where that's where the 200,000 totals up, demonstrative evidence. There are a number of accounts, Amex statements that were not in the record, that they didn't object to, that was not the foundation for that. The dispositive case on not being able to really consider that is Anderson versus Anderson, which I lost, and you ruled on that issue, Judge, by the way, just anecdotally, but I was not the trial lawyer.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard you cite a case you actually lost.
I didn't lose all the issues.
But the opinion was well written, right?
Well, yes. I've cited in my brief here. I'm not trying to be tacky here. But seriously, the demonstrative evidence has to be based on a foundation. And so even though they've alleged all these expenses, the extent of what they're saying is only 50 or 60. We don't agree. I'm not sure that makes a difference. If he hadn't done it and hadn't found that the ends of justice require that to be shifted, then you're ignoring even what's admitted to be to be dissipation. So you can't just say that just because part – and he made no finding as to what part was or wasn't. He just said, I think in the ends of justice I'm going to make it retroactive. And then in his final opinions, in the recitation of his oral statements of findings, he says, I'm considering all of these factors. And it's like he didn't give dollar for dollar.
Did he say all these funds were waste?
No. He even said some of the money was paid to mortgages. But he still said, for the interest of justice, because we don't have the burden of proof met, and to quantify it specifically, we do have a lot of evidence of admitted dissipation, and it's just one account. You can't just say, I'm going to retroactively value it, but I'm only going to value it at $80,000 instead of $40,000. There's no authority for that. But he didn't say I'm then punishing or giving, you know, any specific quantifiable dollars. He just says I'm considering the larger facts of what we have here with all of the other facts of the 1 through 13 or whatever it is in the ED statute that he found very specifically. And then he says, based on that, wife gets the house, husband and her will split up. The amount of the equity in her retirement was 108, so she got 50. Maybe that's the swing that makes it a little unequal, but not shock the conscious. And in fact, in terms of the fault in the factor E5, is it unfair? Does it shock the conscious that she should get a house where her child's living in because he's moved out with his girlfriend? No. Secondly, the disparity of the difference is not that great in terms of, this is not like a 90-10 at the worst. It's going to be in the 50s, maybe 40 to him, if you look at the real-world numbers and crunch them. But there's no finding with the judge that $10,000 was waste, $50,000 was waste, and they're kind of saying it's got to be all or nothing. There's no case law to authorize that. So he had to go back and redo it. But he never said, I'm giving her $130,000 credit, period. He didn't do that. He just said, I'm factoring it in, I'm considering it, and I'm giving her these things. And stepping back and looking at the application of all of the factors, and that's what he said he did. Read it. He says, I'm considering all of the factors, including her contributions and moves and giving up a career and her contributions as the primary caretaker for Kate. All of these support that. She mentions, well, Mrs. Wiley used this account. I think the only thing I saw on the record was a couple hundred bucks here and there. It's not untrue that she did it, but it's not the $30,000 or $40,000 month after month that Mr. Wiley looked at. So I would argue, first, there's no law that says that it can't be a mixed bag. Secondly, he didn't meet the burden of proof sufficient to show what was quantifiable and what was as dissipation and what was proper. He tried, but he didn't get all the evidence in, or the court could have rejected his oral testimony. And third, the court didn't actually quantifiably rely specifically on a dollar amount because it wasn't presented to him. The court even said, help me out, give me the numbers. They never did. And he never said, I'm finding it's 200, 100. So I think that the court's opinion is fair. That's what we're trying to do. It's equitable. We're talking equitable distribution, not equal. And based on his burden of proof under Clemens versus Clemens, it's not met. Would you like to answer any other questions?
Here you go. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, in the context of the motion for alternate valuation date, this is on page 2144 of the record. The trial court said, with respect to the distribution of property, I will start first with a motion for alternate valuation date, then goes into the findings. The court, on that, the court finds that the funds in the accounts were used for both improper purpose and a self-serving purpose. The court distinguishes the case of Wright v. Wright, and then goes into the distribution of property. There is no statement that the court has considered all the factors right before discussing the distribution of property, and there's no discussion in this part of the ruling about the court's finding that some of the money was spent on a proper purpose. The amounts expended by the American Express bills post-separation were refunded by Mr. Wiley almost entirely during the separation, so I don't think that should be a relevant factor here. And finally, regarding the spousal support, if this court finds that the equitable distribution award is to be reversed, then this court has to also ask that a review, the spousal support review is also required pursuant to Robinson v. Robinson. There was no evidence presented aside from these Social Security statements, which not one number in there is $25,000, and going back 4 years, we get to a number close to that. There was no discussion by the trial judge as to how she arrived at that number, and if this court does reverse the ED award, the court then should also be looking at the spousal support as well. In summation, we ask that the court reverse the trial court's finding regarding the equitable distribution award and spousal support award for the reasons stated here today, and impel its brief and request all of their further relief as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will step down and greet counsel and then take up the case of E.E. Automotive.